This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Domestic issues are the focus of tonight's presidential debate at the University of Denver, so it's quite likely President Obama and Governor Romney will be asked about the nation's debt. It's an issue more and more people are talking about. And as part of our election coverage, Colorado Votes, we're going to look at a growing bipartisan coalition that's trying to pressure leaders to take action. Let's start with some perspective. The U.S. debt stands at $16
trillion. $16 trillion is about $50,000 to $55,000 of debt per person.
Sharon Lazar heads DU's School of Accountancy.
That's per infant that was born 2 minutes ago, per elderly person who has a few days left in their life. Everyone in the country, the government has already spent on your behalf $55,000.
Now, $16 trillion is what the U.S. already owes. When you add in future obligations for Social Security and Medicare, the anticipated debt makes $16 trillion look like peanuts.
If you cash out everything you own, your house, your car, your jewelry, shake out the couch cushions for change, everything that the country owns, our household wealth in the country is not big enough to pay off the promises that we have made when you consider the Medicare and Social Security unfunded liabilities.
The U.S. has carried some level of debt since before the Civil War, but it's really started to climb in the last decade or so. That's when you get the Bush tax cuts, followed by the post-9/11 recession, two wars, the Medicare prescription drug benefit, another recession, and the massive stimulus package. And with each new expense, the government must spend more on debt service and less on critical services.
One of the greatest concerns is that it just limits our ability as a country to respond to whatever we might need to respond to. And so there are those that work on national security issues and will cite the national debt as the biggest security concern that we have because it limits our ability to respond.
That's Sharon Lazar, who heads the accounting school at DU. Well, as we mentioned, there's a growing number of groups trying to get policymakers to tackle the debt. One of those groups is at today's debate fest on the DU campus in advance of the debate tonight. Joining us from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget is Maya McGinnis. Maya, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What are you hoping to hear from the candidates in tonight's debate?
Well, the truth is that what I'd most like to happen probably isn't. We need to have an honest discussion as a country about what it's going to take to put in place a $4 trillion debt deal. And basically, it's all the kinds of things that candidates love to promise not to do. We're going to have to talk about how you fix Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. The biggest problems in our budget are retirement and health care costs. Do we want to talk about raising the retirement age because we're living longer? Or means testing benefits for people who don't need them as much, or other changes to the healthcare system. Likewise, we need to talk about raising revenues, and we need to talk about what the best way to raise revenues as part of a deficit reduction plan actually is. And so what I'd like to hear is an honest discussion so that people understand hard choices will be made instead of people saying, I promise not to touch Social Security, I promise not to touch Medicare, and I promise not to raise taxes, because we have to be willing to think about all of those things.
You don't sound optimistic that this will happen or that it will be discussed in the debate.
I'm actually more optimistic than I've been in quite some time that we will put in place a big debt deal. There are a lot of things that are going to take place after the election that will help to move us there. And I'm cautiously optimistic that the debate won't do a lot of damage. But what I wish we were going to hear is two adults talking to us, the voters, like a big group of adults and saying what we all know, which is, this is going to require real choices, and we're going to have to do a lot of the things that we've been putting off for many, many years now. And it would be very useful if we could start the discussion realistically instead of kind of competing for votes by talking about the easy things or making somebody else do all the heavy lifting on fixing this. And I hope that tone could be set. We'll see.
There was a great op-ed piece in the Washington Post that imagined what a speech would sound like if the candidate were talking about the cold, hard truths of the debt. And it basically, this imagined speech, started with language like, ladies and gentlemen, your government has been lying to you. You are not getting the full truth. It would be a very sobering message if it were presented plainly, wouldn't it?
It would be a sobering message. I also think it's one that a lot of people would nod their heads to, because we all realize that, just like in our own homes, you can't borrow indefinitely and have that end up well. We realize that this isn't a way that you can run a country. I think if somebody stepped up and delivered that message, it would ring so true and people would be so grateful to be spoken to directly about these issues that it would have a very positive uptick. I bet you, though, the campaign consultants give some different advice than that.
Right, because, you know, when you talk about, oh, raising the retirement age, when you talk about new revenue, that can be a buzzword for taxes.
Taxes.
I hear you whispering that in the background.
Taxes.
These are all sound bites that immediately, you know, within hours would be in attack ads.
That's true. And that's why this has to be bipartisan. That's why both candidates and both parties have to step up and start to own up to how they would fix the problem. That's why I think one of the good starting points is for both Romney and Obama to clearly say how they would fix the problem, how they would come up with a $4 trillion debt deal, and not sort of leave the hard parts out.
Maya, you've mentioned arriving at a plan that cuts somewhere between $4 and $5 trillion. And, you know, we heard in the introduction just how big the U.S. debt is. Your group is part of a coalition called Fix the Debt that's pushing Congress to pass a debt reduction plan. Has any consensus emerged about what that plan would look like?
So you want a deal that's big enough that it fixes the problem, and you want it to deal with the real roots of the problem, which, again, our retirement system, the aging of population, growing health care costs, Medicaid, Medicare, and other parts of the budget, and revenues that are not sufficient to pay for how much we're willing to spend, and an outdated tax code as well that makes us not competitive with the rest of the world. So you want a plan that fixes the problem and deals with all those pieces. There are a number of plans out there that have met that metric. Simpson-Bowles is the most well-known. The work that the president and Boehner did when they were having negotiations last summer put us on the right track. And there have been lots of efforts since then, including the Biden discussions and the super committee. These are things going on in Washington, which generated good ideas. The truth is, the policy ideas are all well known. They're out there. People know what they are. It's putting together the deal that members of both parties are willing to sign on to and having the courage to say, I'm going to walk away from my preferred plan or my foxhole, my political hole, where I'm unwilling to make any changes, and work with members of both parties to get something that can actually pass.
Let me push back on all of this and ask if it really matters how big the U.S. debt is. I mean, sure, other countries have stakes in our debt, but if they tried to call it in, that would devastate the global economy and hurt the creditors as well. So why does it matter that there's debt?
Well, the real risk is that we plan to continue borrowing more and more, and that we're structurally dependent on borrowing. And rates are so low right now, so it sort of calms you, doesn't seem like a big problem. But think of it as a credit card teaser rate. It's kind of lulling us into complacency. Look, rates are low, we must be okay. Maybe we should even borrow some more. That's just not the case at all, because basically what will happen if we don't make changes is that all the people who are lending us money will look at this country and say, oh my gosh, they're actually not going to get their fiscal house in order. And they're going to look for somewhere else to put that money. And when that happens, our rates shoot up. Borrowing for households on cars and houses and education all becomes much more expensive, likely puts us in a recession, and we get stuck in a very vicious cycle. And what you really want to avoid, it used to seem preposterous to talk about any kind of actual fiscal crisis in this country like what you've seen in Europe, but it's not impossible. We are on a path to borrow ourselves into a full-blown fiscal crisis if we don't make changes.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And in advance of tonight's presidential debate at the University of Denver, which will focus on domestic issues, we are taking a look at the national debt, the size of it, and ideas to reduce it. This is likely to be a discussion between the candidates this evening, though not necessarily as thorough as Maya McGinnis might like. She's president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. This is one of a number of bipartisan groups trying to pressure politicians to address the national debt. Maya, you have a tool at your website called the Budget Simulator, and we'll post a link to this on our site, cpr.org. It invites people to try to reduce the national debt. People can submit their own budgets. And I played with this tool a little bit. You can make all kinds of decisions, from whether or not we need a moon base to benefits for veterans, all the kinds of questions that leaders face when they tackle debt. But I found it next to impossible to really make a dent without new revenue. And this is a major sticking point because there's currently a political party that has said no to any new revenue increases. You know, where does that leave this debate?
Well, I think that's right. If you take a spin out of the budget simulator, which is actually more fun than it sounds, but it's kind of interesting to see some of the things that everybody thinks that you can do that's really going to help are pretty small items in the budget. And unless you look at the biggest items, and on the spending side, that's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and revenues, it's really tough to get the deal done because that's just where the money is. And nobody wants to talk about cutting spending to the extent you'd have to without raising revenues in a serious way. So when people talk about, well, we're not going to raise taxes, either they haven't gone through the exercise of figuring out specifically what spending they'd be willing to cut, or they're willing to cut a lot more than most people. And I'm not saying that either party is right or wrong. I mean, it's okay to have your preferences, but you need to really show the specifics of how you'd get there. And it is tough to do it through spending cuts only, just like it's impossible to do it in a way that would stay in balance through tax increases only. The more you kind of look at the numbers, look at the choices, the more you come to the inevitable conclusion, everything has to be on the table here. I will tell you, though, there is a lot of movement from both Republicans and Democrats, and maybe you don't hear it as much during election season, but behind closed doors, both parties are starting to realize they have to move towards each other. They have to move out of their boxes, and they're going to have to be able to talk about the priorities of the other party as well as their own if they really want to put in place a deal. And so the whole no new taxes or you can't touch Social Security and Medicare, all those promises that just can't stick are starting to weaken.
You mentioned with this budget calculator, actions that people might take they would assume would make a big dent in the debt, but actually don't. What's an example of that?
Well, the biggest one for so long was earmarks, right? People thought that if you just got rid of earmarks, you could fix the budget. And it turns out that that's not going to get you very far anywhere. But even things like saving money in education or research or foreign aid, very small items in the federal budget. And that's something that surprises a lot of people.
It seems to me that in past elections, federal budget tightening was more of a Republican issue. And it's moved into a bipartisan space or a more bipartisan space. Why do you think that is?
That's an interesting question. I think that what I've observed is that fiscal responsibility tends to be espoused by the party not in power, which actually usually shows they're not all that serious, but they're just trying to keep the other party from doing what they want. So Democrats become fiscally conservative when they're trying to get Republicans not to give tax cuts, and Republicans get fiscally conservative when they're trying to get Democrats not to spend more. It's a little bit of a generalization, but I have seen that. It's more of a game of defense than people who are really eager to be fiscally responsible because it means paying for what you're going to do and not doing as much.
Is a time when we are limping out of a major recession the time to be tackling debt?
It is a time to put a big deal in place, but those changes on the spending and revenue side of the budget don't have to kick in yet. So if you put in a 10-year plan today, you can announce it today, you can lock it in through some budget rules, you can lay out what the policies are, but they don't even have to start for another year. And you buy yourself some time, you buy yourself time for the economic recovery to take hold. But that stability that you put in place actually will help the economy to recover even faster. Right now, the uncertainty is killing us.
Maya, thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Have fun watching the debate tonight.
I will. You too.
Maya McGuinness is president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She's also part of Fix the Debt, a group participating in Debate Fest at the University of Denver today. Our conversation is part of CPR's election coverage, Colorado Votes. And we will air the presidential debate from DU live tonight, starting at 7:00.